Hello and thank you for joining us. This is Brian, your host of the Perish the Thought Show. The opinions of said host and our guests have not been sanitized or scientifically tested, so please consume at your own risk.
Ladies and gentlemen, and whoever else is listening, my guest today is a young man who only 3 short years ago was depressed, broke, rejected by family and friends, drudging through dead-end jobs, working himself to the bone for a meager $10 an hour, barely making payments on a Toyota Corolla. Since then, he has risen literally to the top of the door-to-door sales industry, ending his 2021 season with over $1 million in sales and over 1,200 accounts sold, becoming the number one sales agent in the industry. His reward? At age 23, he was able to pay cash for a Lamborghini. He truly is in a league of his own. Please help me in welcoming Austin Pritchard.
And I remember you were this new kid struggling to get his real estate license. And I know I struggled when I started there too, but even I was thinking, oh, this poor guy, I don't know if he's going to make it. And I know you struggled trying to take that real estate test, which is ridiculously hard. And right. The Utah real estate test. So you have, and then you left after what, a few months?
Yeah, I left. I think I was there 2 or 3 months. And then.
So I want to hear your story from that point and how you got to where you're at now.
Sure.
So all the ups and downs and mental struggles you went through and the whys and just the why behind what you did.
Honestly, I think it started when I was there. Really just, being young, I was probably barely 20 and just got off my mission. And honestly, was just kind of lost. I get home and went through a faith crisis, still kind of going through it on the way out of it, which is good. But was just starting that. And so it was just questioning a lot of things. So when I was there, I was honestly super excited for the opportunity, grateful for the opportunity. But I didn't fully appreciate what it could have done for me. Sales in general can be insane if you allow it to be. And so I, instead of studying as best I should have and taking full advantage of the opportunity, which is partying on the weekends or, not really caring to, make it work when I had that great opportunity there. So eventually I left, couldn't pass the real estate test. I took it 2 or 3 times. And it was just getting to a point where I was wasting my money, my time, and honestly hurting relationships by being there probably, just because I wasn't taking it very serious. So I left from there. It's hard to remember exactly what I did from that point, but I went to sell cars. Kind of was one of the lowest of lows.
You used car salesman?
I used car salesman, just
schmarmy and all that. Did you just put on the whole persona?
I worked around some good people, but it was just at the end of the day, I was a used car salesman and not very happy with life, so that was, I was a team leader there. So I managed, closed and opened the store and whatnot and had a bunch of guys, made sure the processes were getting done. Anyways, from there, I wanted to move up in the company. And after 6 months of being there, I, wanted to try to move up. And I asked, a position came available to be an assistant store manager. And I asked to be interviewed for it. They didn't really take me seriously. Said I was too young. Said I didn't have enough experience. And that honestly kind of grinded my gears because I was like, bro, I'm your hardest worker. Like, why would you not? My age doesn't matter. Why would you not let me take that position if it's available?
Yeah, we get hung up on titles and age and things like that instead of like, look at the merit of this kid. Look what he's doing.
So at that time, I was making $13.50 an hour, which I thought was phenomenal. I thought it was great.
Well, at 20 years old, 20 plus years old, it's not a horrible wage.
Yeah, and if I would have got the assistant manager position, I would have, you know, got $15 an hour. So not much more, but it, again, I was really chasing the next level and really just not being satisfied. And that scared a lot of people that I was jumping around and not staying satisfied. Obviously my parents were worried because I kept moving jobs.
It almost comes across as instability.
Yeah, I got that a lot. You're so unstable. You're so inconsistent in life and blah, blah, blah. But in my mind, it wasn't like that. I was, hey, I'm trying to get up the ladder.
Looking for the next best thing.
Yeah. And so I kept moving across the country and whatnot. So after that, I was dating a girl. She moved back to Utah. I felt like I needed to move back up that general direction to be near her. But also really the main thing was I just felt like I wasn't making enough money and I was not going to progress in the way I wanted to. And around that time, this whole time I had been thinking, you know, I want to get into real estate. I want to be able to buy investment properties. How am I going to do it? I can't do it making $13 an hour. I can barely pay my apartment complex. And I lived in the most ghetto apartment complex in my town. So literally had the people above me kicked out because when they would smoke weed, it would fill up my apartment so bad with smoke. And I would probably get high. I don't know. but anyways, she moved up there. I decided it was important to go up there as well. Everybody thinks I was chasing her. It might've been, but I think it was more of, you know, just the next opportunity to make more money. I moved up to Idaho Falls working for a concrete company where we would do high-end concrete jobs. We would stain the floors of aircraft carrier, or what are those things?
Hangars.
Hangars, as well as we worked on the CEO of Miller Lite on his floor in his basement up in the Yellowstone Club. The company also did Tom Brady's basement floor. Like, got to see like super wealthy people and who I wanted to be around. And I just kept telling myself when I was working on the floors, you know, I will get to a spot where I could, you know, have stuff like this. It was kind of a low spot. I was one day, somebody, I don't remember who it was, came out when we were working on their house and just talked to me like I was the lowest of the lows. Like,
you know, treated you like the help, like the staff, yeah,
like a slave to them. And I'm like, man, if I ever make it like that, I would never talk to somebody like that. Like, it was so demeaning. But anyway,
you know what? It's people like that that give that perpetuate the stereotype that rich people are evil bastards.
Yeah.
And they exploit the working class to get where they are. And it's unfortunate.
Right. But from there, I was just super unhappy, man. I working my ass off. Didn't feel like I was getting results and still had zero money, even though I was working all the time. Just mentally was not in a good spot. Just very, very depressing time. But it was good. I was staying super busy, so I wasn't able to think about it a whole lot. Yeah. But after that, I was there for only a couple months. The boss there, the manager, was honestly very verbally abusive to his guys. He even was sometimes physically abusive to his workers, would push him down. And we'd be up there for 15 hours and he'd come up and, you know, we'd eaten one meal that day and he's not letting us go take a break, and would come up in his nice car and, you know, he'd be eating a hot dog or whatever. And it was honestly just, it was terrible. Like, would come up and, why aren't you guys working? You know, we're on our hands and knees with a grinder. You haven't got anything done. Well, we've been working for 15 hours, you know, like, get on your hands and knees and help us. So I learned a lot of valuable things from him. I just decided whenever I was back in management, like, or had my own company, I knew exactly how not to treat my employees. And I want to drive my Lamborghini up to his shop and just flip him off now, because he's just the biggest prick of the world.
Oh, I would love to see that. I would pay to see that.
I would. I've thought about it, but then I'd have to get it up there. Yeah. Anyways, from there, I decided I had a buddy down in Salt Lake who I was on my mission with, and he got me hooked up for this job, which I absolutely loved. It was working in a bank type thing, doing business loans, business leases type thing on people who were doing startup companies. So somebody wanted to buy a food truck, we would lease them the money for the food truck, or, you know, things like that, which was real cool. And it was almost like a sales type job, almost selling them on the fact, you know, why they should, you know, go with our company for the financing, which again, I loved. I loved talking to people all day. I loved being able to sell them the service. But when I moved there, didn't have anywhere to live. If I'm being honest, I slept in my truck for probably a week or so, at least, probably more. I don't know. I don't really remember. But then I, you know, I went to my parents, asked for help. They were just tired of helping. Went to my siblings. They wouldn't help me. I had siblings that lived in Provo, and I just wanted to, you know, stay with them. And they're like, you know, we can't help you. And it was just,
wow, you were just like getting rejected and life smacking you 6 ways from Sunday.
Rejected. The girl I was with didn't want to be with me. You know, just, I felt completely rejected in life, and finally had a friend who was like, bro, you can come sleep on my floor. You can be here for a couple weeks. Like, don't plan on making it long term, but get your savings, whatever you need. Like, and that was honestly pretty cool. I slept on the floor in one of his spare rooms. It was honestly like it was not a good situation. A lot of, you know, alcohol, weed in that house, and just a very depressing time. I was sleeping on the floor just because I couldn't afford to go anywhere else. And, you know, from there, my grandma in Salt Lake said, you know, you can come stay here. You can give me some rent money. So I went there for one night. And then when I was there, I just, you know, decided I can't do this. You know, this is my grandma. I can't live here. I felt like I was taking advantage of her. So I met up with this dude in one of the wards there. And that night, the night after I went to my grandma's house, I went to a church activity. I think that's where I met him, and was told, hey, go to, you know, hit this guy up. And I moved in that night to his house. It was a cool place. Pretty nice townhouse. So I slept in there, had my own room. It's only paying a couple $100 a night or a month. And really that's what got me up my feet underneath me. That kid was a huge help. One of my good friends now. But anyways, went there, started making better decisions, got away from the alcohol, the drugs. And I traded my truck in, which was a huge burden, you know, on the money at the time. It was a $15,000 Dodge Ram. And I should have traded in months before, but it would have hurt my ego too bad. But at that point, I didn't even care anymore. It was just getting my life under me. So I traded in for a Corolla, and that was 2 years ago this month. Got the Corolla. So after that, I stayed there for a couple months at that job. I loved it. And then I actually met one of my best friends now. His name's Darren. When I was living up in Idaho Falls. And I came back after working concrete for, like, I think I just worked a 75-hour week. And I came back it was like 10 o'clock. I was like, hey, man, I want to meet with you. My cousin told me to come meet with you. I walked in there in my blue jeans I'd been wearing all week, probably smelled real bad, covering concrete, and just walked in there and was like, felt real comfortable. Another sales job, selling pest control. I thought it was kind of like too good to be true. How could you make so much money?
And this was Aptiv, or was this another one?
So this is Aptiv.
Okay.
So I met with him and didn't really think much of it, because again, I thought it was too good to be true. I'd already gone door to door, didn't like the idea of doing it again. So I walked out after the meeting. I thought it was a good meeting. He was a really cool dude. Anyways, fast forward, I'm in Utah. He calls me and he's like, "Hey man, haven't heard from you in a while." Kind of blow him off again. "Yeah, dude, doing well. I'm actually down in Utah. Sorry, I couldn't make it work," type of thing. And he just kept on me, you know, he kept calling me, following up with me, getting to know me. And then eventually COVID hit. I still had a job. People started to get furloughed around me, which was scary to see people lose their jobs. Like my good friends I'd, you know, made friends with, good workers who've done everything right. For whatever reason, you know, lady right behind me, she's worked there for years, gets furloughed. I didn't. Person on the other side of the cubicle from me gets furloughed. I didn't. And it was just very scary. My job was
teetering.
Teetering, and I could lose that at any second. Well, anyways, we go to at-home work only. So I decided I'm going to go back to Texas. My parents let me come stay with them for a week or so. I went there, which was going to go for like a vacation. Just, "Hey, I'm going to come work from your house for a little bit. See you guys. I haven't seen you in a while." Anyways, from that point, my parents were kind of worried about COVID at the time. So they wouldn't let me leave, which was great. I loved it. So I was like, "Well, cool. I don't have to leave." Well, from there, the summer was about to start, and I still hadn't fully committed to it, to going door to door again. Anyways, my manager called me, Darren, and he says, "Dude, what do you have to lose? You know, you've already told me your people are getting furloughed. At any minute, you could be stuck jobless at your parents' house. Like, what do you have to lose? If you come out right now, you have, what, $500 in your bank account. If you don't make it, I'll give you $1,000 and to get back home. I'll double your money to get back home. You can go back to your job. You can go, you know, do something else." But he's like, "If you take the shot, I promise you're not going to fail." All right, man. So I got in my Corolla and drove to Dallas, met up with the team there. And I had no idea what I was doing. I hadn't learned the pitch at all. And the first night I was there, there was a kid on the team who was actually he was a manager. He's like, "Man, this kid's not going to make it."
He said that about you?
Yeah. And I heard him say it. He actually laughed at my pitch and said, "This guy's not going to make it." Anyways, that week I went out and I just really committed. "Hey, I'm going to work as hard as I can this week. I don't have anything else to lose. I don't have any other options. If I don't make it here, it's back to construction, basically." Because that's the only job that probably would hire me at the time.
Do you think, maybe back up, do you think he said that to try to like reverse psychology, try to inspire, or do you think he meant it because he was a prick?
He was a prick, and I think he saw the potential, but also he was a first-year manager. He had only done 250 accounts his first year, which is huge. That's good for a first-year rep to do 250. So, I mean, he was a good rep, but at the same time, he wasn't my direct manager. He was just a team manager.
Okay. So
he was just – it was more of – a serious remark, and I didn't like it. So I actually wrote that down and I looked at it every day. He's not going to make it. And then it was, you know, "Today I will beat David Hall. I will sell more than him. I will sell more than him."
So that was fuel.
So it was a lot of fuel. And I had to go ahead and, you know, every day had to compete with somebody who at the time I thought was better than me. Anyways, my second weekend to the job, I had been selling good, like consistent 2-3 to 4 accounts a day, maybe, probably probably 2 to 4 accounts a day. Second week into the job, I was out about half the day. I sold one and I was just going through it mentally and was like, "Man, I can't do this." So I went home early. Next day I go out feeling mentally down again and pissed that I only got one the day before is my lowest day yet. So the second day I went out and I didn't get anything, but I only stayed out until I really only worked probably 3 hours that day. Just being lazy. I got zero and I was pissed. So I actually drove from Dallas back to my parents' house, met up with my at the time girlfriend, told her I couldn't do it. And she had already seen I'd made great money, more money than I'd made anywhere else. And I wasn't selling extraordinary at the time. But anyways, Darren called me, my manager. Dude, where the hell are you at? I'm like, I'm in Temple. I don't know if I can do it. And he's like, did I tell you you could leave? I'm like, no. And he was like, well, what's going on? And so I just told him what's going on, told him, man, I just don't know if I can do it. I'm making good money, but like, it's a pretty hard job. And he's like, yeah, it's a hard job, but it's hard to make money. And then he basically determined I didn't have any why at the time. Like the reason I was out there was to survive, to make money. And it's a good why, but it wasn't big enough. And so really established, hey, this is your, you know, you need to come up with a vision board tonight. Why are you out here? Why are you deciding to do this? So we made a vision board, decided, hey, I want to do real estate. I've always wanted to do real estate. If I could make enough money in this job to be able to buy passive, you know, investments, then that's what I want to be able to do. So I put on that vision board. I'll send it to you so you can, oh, I guess you don't do the video, but anyways, I'll still send it to you, my original one. I wanted to buy a new truck because I was ashamed to drive a Corolla. It was just, I'm a man's man. Like I like to hunt and stuff. So I wanted to have
a truck. You can't hunt in a Corolla?
Right. So I wanted to buy a second gen Tacoma, something cheap, good truck that would last me a while. And I wanted to buy a boat that year if I made over 100,000, which I thought there was no way in hell I'd make that much. You know, I had heard people had done it their first year, but I just didn't know it was going to be possible. And I put on their investment properties. I put my parents on there because they told me not to leave my job I was at. They told me it was stable. You're finally in a good spot. You love your job. Don't leave.
Safe and secure.
Safe and secure. Stay where you're at. You're so inconsistent. This is you just being inconsistent again. So I put them on there as my villain to look at every day and to prove wrong. So every day I was looking at the boat. I was looking at the truck. I was looking at my parents who doubted me. I was looking at David Hall who said, you can't do this. You're going to fail. And the fire just fueled in me. So the next day I go out after making the vision board and I actually set a region record and I sold 15 that day. Which is insane, like insanity. I think out of all rookies that year I sold in the whole company, that was probably one of the biggest days out of all rookies. And then from there, it was just, I saw my potential and I just decided to go completely out, you know, completely.
It's almost like you tasted the blood in the water, like a shark.
It was. I tasted the blood. I had just made $5,000 that day or whatever it was. I was like,
which was unheard of in your world, in your paradigm.
Oh yeah. When I made $5,000 in one day, I'm like, are you joking? This is real. Like
I can freaking do this.
I can do this. And it was finally a huge win. Finally a win I just needed for years and years of just the mental mind.
Existing. You were existing.
Yeah. Just the,
which is the worst.
I was in. So, I mean, from there, it was just huge. I think the next day I went out and I sold 8. And what was cool about the 15 day before I keep going is we have these competitions. It was on a Wednesday. We have these competitions where it's throwdowns. It was a Thursday. It's called Throwdown Thursday, where you call somebody out and say, hey, I want to go against you. Well, anyways, I called out the best salesman in the room who consistently would throw down 7s and 8s. And I said, I want to go against you today. And everybody's like, okay, like, good luck. Anyways, I went out and more than doubled him. And that just gave me a ton of confidence. But anyways, from there, I sold 8, I think, the next day. And then from there, it was basically, I love myself. I'm happy. I will sell 6. Don't be a bitch or something like that. And so every day I was, I'm going to sell six today, no matter what. And I'd stay out there till I had six, at least six. And I mean, there was nights I was out there till 10 o'clock, grinding my ass off, trying to get that. Anyways, I think every day that year I made over $1,000 in that summer. I ended up making over 120,000 my first summer with Aptiv. I was out there for 3.5 months and ended up being the number three first year rep in the whole company. I did 513 accounts, over 275,000 in revenue my first year. And yeah, it's completely changed my life from there. After that season though, I, you know, had a couple of regrets that I didn't train. And before going out, I felt like I was good, but I honestly felt like I could have done more. I had sold over 670 something, but I only serviced 513. So I knew this next year going in, I was going to start with a technician, my own personal technician who followed me door to door. So my retention was going to be a lot better. But anyways, during the off season, I decided, you know, I want to go and do 1,000. Nobody's ever done it their second year. At least at our company that I know of. There's only been 9 or 10 other people in the last 15 years to do 1,000 at our company. So I wanted to do 1,000. I wanted to be great. So it was funny. When I first got back, I looked myself in the mirror and I said, I'm going to do 1,000. And I just started laughing because I didn't believe it.
You didn't believe yourself?
I didn't believe myself, even though I had just done that well that last year, but I only did half of it.
That's a fascinating mental position to be in. You just slayed it and done better than you ever have in your entire life. Yet part of you says, yeah, it's not enough. Or and that was focus on the gap there.
Yeah. And that's what's crazy is people were always like, you know, how did you decide that it wasn't enough? I mean, you made 100,000 your first year. And before that whole year before, you probably made $20,000. Like, how is 120,000 not enough? You 6x'd your income. And I was like, honestly, I was out there and I just felt like I didn't reach my full potential. Like,
was it the money or like, I think you said the word potential. You knew there was more in you, just
the potential, growth. The pride of doing my best, to being my best self. I think that's what it was. You know, the money is a huge motivator. Yeah, there's a ton of money. If I could double what I did, I get a lot of pay raises. I would make 300,000 to 400,000, whatever. But I think it was the potential. Looking back, was I just had this epiphany one day. Hey, I've tasted some really low days, and I feel like I'm pretty high right now, but I'm not to the highest point I could get to. And that kind of fueled me. I'm like, I wonder, because, you know, Newton's law, there's an equal and opposite reaction. There has to be an equal high to what I felt low. And so that really fueled me. So in the off season, I would look at myself in the mirror, and the day where I told myself I will do 1,000 kind of scared me. In the mirror, it was just me and myself looking in there. And then I kind of got mad at myself when I started laughing, and don't mean to be vulgar, but this is what I said. Like, I was just like, no, fuck you. Like, I will do 1,000. I just started yelling at myself. I will do 1,000. I will do 1,000. I'm yelling at myself, cussing myself out. Like, I will do it. And I was just like full of rage and like eventually started believing it. Got real emotional because it was just a deep belief. You know, I'm gonna pull myself even higher than where I'm at. And from there on out, everything I did was focused towards that number. I broke down every day for the next summer, how many I had to sell, and I had to do at least 10 a day. Well, at least 9 a day. So I wanted to, well, it's really 8.5 a day. So I decided I'm going to do 10 a day just to see how far I can go. Well, anytime I was doing my workouts, if I was running, I was always focused on the 10, because if I just did 10, focused on the day, you know, that's where it's going to add up. So if I was at the weight room, I was doing 10 reps, 10 sets, heavy weight, making it super hard. And I'm like, when I'm pumping them out, I will sell 10. I will sell 10. I will sell 10. I will sell 1,000. I will sell 10. I will sell. So over and over again, like pumping them out, these reps, and in my mind and saying it out loud. And, you know, that's when the belief really started kicking in. There was, I don't know if anybody remembers, but last year there was a big snowstorm and everything. It shut down the whole state of Texas. Like, you know, we didn't have water. We didn't have electricity or anything. So I was out in my barn, you know, no electricity, out at my parents' house, and kind of got stuck there for a couple of days. Anyways, all I had to run in was a pair of rubber muck boots. And so there's over 2 feet of snow, probably close to 3 feet of snow on the roads. We don't have snow plows. And so we don't have salt. We don't have anything to take care of the roads. I'm out there in muck boots running for an hour, you know, down the back road. I get back to the barn and my dad has some weights in there. And, you know, I was lifting one day. The heaviest I'd ever lifted was 180 pound dumbbells on bench press. And I just decided, you know, I'm going to do 10 sets. I'm going to do 10 reps of the hundreds, which is a big jump for me, you know, 100 pound dumbbells. That's pretty big.
That's a huge deal.
And so I jumped up to the hundreds and did them 10 reps. And just, I was screaming at myself, man. When I was pumping them out, I will sell 1,000. I will sell 1,000, just screaming. But anyways, I don't know. It's my Rocky moment, I guess. Go ahead.
No, well, keep going. I have some questions, but keep going.
Cool. So eventually we go on this trip. One of my good friends says he's going to do it as well, going to do 1,000 as well. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to do it faster than you do it. Well, that's probably not going to happen. But I don't know. That was just kind of one last fuel to the fire. Oh, actually, there is one more thing. On this trip, there's a kid who had done 1,000 before. And I just wanted some information, you know, just wanted to rub shoulders. And I got to rub shoulders with several guys who had done it. And I just felt kind of blown off. And so that was just my villain this last year, at least for a little bit. Once I passed him, I really didn't care anymore because I knew I was better than him. But yeah, he was like my David Hall this year. I'm not going to mention who it is because he's actually a good guy. And, you know, anyways, I go out this past summer. I decided to start in March because I knew I needed to have at least double the time on the doors. I did 500 in 3.5 months. There's no way I couldn't do at least 1,000. Well, I get out there and my first day, did you want to stop and ask questions before or should I keep going? Cool.
Well, no, yeah, maybe let me do this. Since we're sort of halfway through the story, what did you have? Like, did you have mentors and coaches you were working with, or was this just you fueling yourself? And then the second question, all your naysayers, like your parents, what were they saying?
After I made it?
Yeah. Like after you'd done that, you know, your 500, 600 sales, what was your parents? Did you go and have a sit down with them and say, hey, you told me to stay a stable job. I didn't. Were they like, hey, we were wrong? Or what's their perspective now?
Yeah. Remind me what the first question is.
Were you mentors? Did you have people mentoring you, or were you just kind of doing this? You were self-motivated.
Honestly, it was just self-motivated. I just knew I had to do better in life. I knew I wanted to get into real estate. I knew I needed to make a change. And that was enough for me. After the first summer, my parents, I went to them and they're like, kind of like, all right, we'll believe the money when we see it.
They were still naysaying?
Just kind of doubting the whole process, skeptical of door-to-door sales. Anyways, Christmas morning, my second back end hit and I was able to take it into them and show them a $60,000 check and how all the numbers added up. And they were like, okay. You know, like they're proud of me, definitely proud of me, but, yeah, I was still kind of upset with them. And I still somewhat use them sometimes as a motivator just because I feel like sometimes, not anymore, but I did use them for a while for motivator, just because I didn't like that they doubted me, and I didn't like that they told me to, you know, stay where it's at.
That happens a lot. I was reading a book by Grant Cardone called Be Obsessed or Be Average. Don't know if you've ever read that one. And he said it was a similar thing. He says he just kept pushing and kept pushing because he was at the he almost died from a drug deal, you know, kind of thing gone bad. People beat him within an inch of his life. So he got obsessed and just started just slaying it. And he says, people who love me would come to me and say, just be stable, you know, just stability, just get that stable job. And they did it out of a sense of wanting to protect him, which is what parents do.
Right.
They do that to be stable, find something secure, because they're in a different generation where that was the thing. And they mean well, but it comes across as you're, you know, trying to squash my flames kind of thing.
Right.
But it's annoying as hell.
Yeah, it was. But I'm glad for it. I'm glad because it really fueled the fire, and I had to prove him wrong. I had to prove my dad wrong that I wouldn't make it, you know? So, and it was a big motivator. I wanted to go make $100,000 before my dad did at that point in his life. He's a lawyer, so he's real successful as a good practice. So I wanted to go and I want to make $100,000 before he did at my point in life. And I was 21 now at that time. But anyways, after that, I did get some sales coaches. I got a sales coach and he helped me a lot with mentality. Mental toughness, which was another good one. And at this time, before my first summer, that was one thing I really struggled with my whole life through sports, through everything, was mental toughness. Like if we did a series where I talked about my upbringing, that would be the one thing I struggled with the most, was probably mental toughness and stick-to-itiveness, like sticking to something. Like, and so, you know, that was my first big win that first summer. But after it, I got a sales coach and he's great. I still occasionally meet with him. But anyways, after that first off season where I just went crazy with training, showed up to area. I drove to Houston this year for my preseason area. I was there from April or from beginning of, or mid-March until mid-April. I went there and this is my first day back for our sales season. I just, you know, I put in this training that I would do 10 a day every day. And I'm at 9 and I can't stop at 10. Or I can't stop at 9 today. And it's 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, I showed her the leaderboards. I want to beat this guy today. I want to be number one. Like, it would mean a lot. And I said, Erica, if you know what? You're one of the most persistent guys I've ever met. I can tell you want your goals. And I was like, I do. And so she finally closed. She let me close her. We had a great conversation. Honestly, she had a vision board hanging up on her wall. And we talked about that for a while and how big vision is to me as well. Anyways, just connected. And that was a huge win. Just starting the summer with that was huge for me because, you know, I had to do the 10. Anyways, 2 days later, I beat my personal best, and that's 2 days into the season, which was huge. Most people, it takes a while to warm up and get back into it. I sold 16 my first year. I sold 15 at the beginning of the summer and then 16 at the end of the summer. So my third day into the summer this past year, I sold 17 and I was pissed. I was completely pissed because I didn't sell 20. I was three away. When you sell 17, you're like, man, should have done 20. I wasn't even happy that I beat my old PR. I was just pissed.
That's an interesting mindset.
Yeah. And just staying kind of unsatisfied has been a big, big plus and a big help to my sales experience or my sales experience. So I was livid. If I'm being honest, I came home and I'm like, ugh. Like calling Darren, I'm like pissed. I'm like, dude, I was three away. So mad. And he's like, well, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to keep bitching about it? Or are you actually going to go do something? Like, kind of like, F you, dude. Like, I'm trying. Like, I was so mad. I probably didn't cuss him out. He's a big motivator. But anyways, I went back out next day, probably did 12 or something. And I think it was 2 days later, I was at 15 by like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Anyways, 5 or 6 o'clock, I still have 4 hours left of knocking, and it's just a torrential downpour out of nowhere. Like torrential. I'm saying like almost hurricane type rain. It's moving sideways. It's blowing sideways. The wind is and blowing the rain. I'm like, I'm at 15. There's no way I have 4 hours left. There's no way I'm going home unless I get 20. So I'm out there. Anyways, I go back out and I think I close. Like most people aren't answering the door. But eventually I got my 20 to sell that night at 9:30 probably. Again, the 20 to sell. I went back to a lady who told me she wasn't interested. And I just went back and closed her. And I thought that was insane, you know. 20 sells, I finally did it. But I was still unsatisfied. Like still was just, okay, well, our region record is 23. I should have done 3 more sales. I was that close, and who knows if I'll have another day like that. So 2 days later, that next day I went out. I think I did like 6 sales the next day, which I was pissed about. Just wasn't a good day, which is funny. My first year, that was my goal. This last year, if I did anything under 10, I was livid. So the day after I did 6, I went back out. I did 26 sales.
Nice.
I got the region record. And that's when I started making some hype around the company. People really started to notice my name because I, you know, did 20 the day, 2 days before. And there's only a number of people who've had 20 days in our company. So, and then I did 26 and they're like, who the heck is this guy? Like some people knew who I was from my first year, but nobody really pays attention to the rookies because they're not really throwing down insane numbers. And I really liked that. I started getting company shout outs and it felt good. You know, like people are starting to recognize who I was. And then from there, it was just had my head down grinding the whole summer. It was a tough, very tough summer to stay that consistent. I think there was only probably a handful of days I wasn't number one on the day in the whole company. And it was real hard to stay that consistent. And I wish I could put into words just how hard it was. But anyways, I guess I can do a couple more highlights from the summer.
Well, during this time, are you making more friends or more enemies?
In the company?
Yes.
I think a lot of friends. People started reaching out. And again, I went back to that manager who I had at Concrete. And I went back to the guys who wouldn't help me get to where I was. And I just decided I'm going to respond to every single person. And I get hundreds of messages now, hundreds of DMs, not from people just at our company, but across the industry now, you know, asking for help. And if I'm being honest, I've reached back out to every single person and just given them some advice. Sometimes it's the same question. So I just have a list of questions and answers to it. And I just copy and paste it. And it's the same answer I would give. But I think I started making a lot of good friends at the time. Again, I did have some enemies, but nobody was really pacing as close as I was. So everybody was kind of just watching in awe. It's not like anybody was pissed because I was, you know, they were right there and I was beating them. But I was really just trying to help as many people as possible. After a couple months during the summer, we had what's called the Masters competition, which is it's a huge company-wide competition. There's, you know, 3,000-4,000 reps in our company. And basically what it is it's kind of like the March Madness of pest control sales. So you go the whole season almost, you have 1v1 competitions against somebody else in the country. And you see who sells more and who has a higher contract value that day. You get a structure of points during a 2-day period. Well, anyways, I make it all the way to the final match. I lost a couple times, if I'm being honest, and I bounced back in. Bouncing back in means you have to sell double the amount of somebody else in the tournament still. I lost twice. So I jumped back in the Elite Eight and I won out until the finals. So when I was in the finals, I was going against I was going up against a guy who has done 1,000 before. So he's a good rep. My first day, I was not looking at the scoreboard at all. I didn't want to know what he was at. And I did 28 sales that day. New PR, pissed, livid I didn't hit 30. Really livid I didn't hit 33, because 33 is a company record. It wasn't just the region record, but it was a company record, was set like 7-8 years before, or several years before. I don't know how long. But anyways, I looked at the score that night and I was really surprised, actually. You know, I had done 28 sales. That's a massive day. And Jake West had done 27 sales. And I was like, damn. And he was actually beating me on points. You know, that was the hardest I ever worked in a day. And I made well over $10,000 that day, $15,000, and just honestly pissed because he was staying up with me. I thought I was going to blow him out of the water. Anyways, next day I go out and I just decided, actually that night, my younger sister always joked, because she was out there, well, you didn't beat Brigham Lindsay's single day record, so you're not the GOAT yet. Like, you got to go beat his single day record of 33 sales. So that next day I go out and I did 34. Jake West did 32. He ended up beating me in the Masters, which was good. It was humbling. He beat me fair and square. It was honestly the best match our company's ever seen. So it was insane. It was a good time, but broke the company single day record. I don't know if somebody's going to beat that here anytime soon. It took years for somebody to beat it the last time. I'm sorry. He did 31 sales, Brigham did. So I beat his company record by 3. So I don't know. It'll be a long time, hopefully, before somebody beats
it. Well, it might, and it's a humbling and good thing, because you will have inspired someone to be better.
Right.
Than you.
Right.
Which is, that's a good place to be.
Yeah. I know. If somebody beats that, they deserve it. I mean,
yeah, of course. Cause you know, the work it took, you know, to get where you were. So if someone beats that, you know that they've slayed it. So. All right. So you won this competition.
You set
the record for the whole company ever. All-time record.
I didn't win it, but it was a huge
victory. Sorry.
It was almost more of a win for me that I had done my biggest week in 2 days. Previously, my biggest week was like probably 55, 56 sales. In those 2 days during that competition, I did 62 sales.
That's amazing.
And so again, I unlocked another level after that day. That's why I wanted to talk about this, is because from that moment on, I realized I need to be selling at a higher level. I was already selling at a crazy level, but then after that, I was like, if I'm not selling at least 59, 60 sales a week, I'm really not working hard. I'm not working hard enough. And so it was a huge win. That was the first time I was really ever satisfied about PRing, because I finally beat the record, and you know, it was pretty cool to have that record. But anyways, I ended that week at 84 sales. The previous all time week record was 81 sales. Jake West actually beat me though. So I have the second all time week in the company. He did 102 that week, which is, it's just insane. His Monday and Tuesday match, he did 228 that week as well. And I didn't have a Monday or Tuesday match. I had a bye, but anyways, after that, kind of kicked into a new level, and I was at like 800,000 in revenue at that point. So I knew I was going to hit 1 million. Well, kind of. I was still going back and forth about it. It was just pretty, I don't know why I was going back and forth. I was already there. I don't know. I just still didn't think it was possible.
Well, because that's your old mental wiring is still in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let me see exactly when this is, because it's kind of important. So let me look back on my Instagram real quick. So during the competition, I hit 1,000 accounts during that 2-day match, which was cool because that was my original goal.
Okay.
I hit 1,000 accounts that first day of that match. And this is in August. And then that's August 12th. And I hit 1 million September 2nd. Reason why that's important, in the week of, or the month of August was my biggest ever month. I did 287 serviced and 275,000 in revenue that month. Which, I mean, at the competition, if I just do a million minus 250, probably.
So 750.
I was at 750,000 and I just stepped it up a notch and finished it out in like 2.5-3 weeks. 275,000 in a month was, I don't know if that's ever been done, honestly, by anybody in the industry. After, I mean, I was so tired. I'd been knocking for 5 months already. But after those 2 days, I just knew I had to kick it into gear because I wasn't at my full potential. And so I just decided I had to go get my full potential. You know, I always go back to that. And yeah. I don't think I sold, I had a 60 week all the way up until I finished, at least 60.
Dude, that's a hell of a story. Yeah. And I, you know, and I just thought, you don't want to go back to your $10 an hour concrete job in Idaho.
Yeah.
That's a, that is massive. That is on a personal growth level. It's huge. So huge. Obviously, you know that, but all right. So now you hit that mark, and how do they, you say, okay, you get a Lamborghini at this, not like, and when I first saw you posting pictures about it, I've heard of stories where they give you access to the Lamborghini, but right. It's not yours, but this one is yours.
This one's mine. I have the blue slip. I have the blue tag. It is in my name. It's in my name. But they gave me X amount of dollars for it. So
what does a Lamborghini go for these days?
The one I bought, it's a 2014. It's a couple years old, but it had less than 20,000 miles when I bought it. So it's real good condition. I was going to go for a new one and lease it and use their money as like pay it. But I didn't want to spend $3,000 a month on a car. So I just bought one in cash. I found one that was a couple years old and put their money in.
Okay.
I spent about $40,000 of my own money, and I just took in $150,000 in cash and bought a Lamborghini.
That's crazy. That's awesome. That's called FU money.
It was cool. I'm not gonna lie. It's pretty damn cool.
At 23 years old, you were able to purchase a Lamborghini. That's insane.
Yeah, it was cool.
So now what? Now what's on the docket for Austin Pritchard?
You know, if I'm being honest, I've
I hope you're being honest. You haven't been lying to me this whole time, have you?
Right. If I'm being honest, I don't exactly know what's next. I don't know if I go for a million again, or I'm really just trying to help my guys all make over 100,000 now. I'm trying to recruit as much as possible, just so I can get into coaching a little bit more. So now I ended the summer with six guys. Six of my closest friends came out with me last year. Ended this last summer with six guys. And since then I've recruited I'm over 20 people now on my team. So I'm hoping to take out at least 100 people this next summer. So I'll spend most of my time coaching, leading. Don't know if I'll hit a million. I'm definitely going to go for 1,000 because I think I could be able to do that with leading that many people. Also, I did want to say that when I did a million, I also did 1,226 accounts. So beat my original goal by more than, 200.
So now it looks like you, those first few, years and months, you're building Austin. Now Austin's building other people.
Yeah, I think I've finally got to a spot where it's been kind of a weird transition, because now I'm to a spot where I've made a ton of money and I can go buy as much real estate really as I want right now. And I'm trying to figure out what the new goal is.
Well, and I think, okay, you're 23.
I think the new goal next year, I want to make 1.2 million is my goal next year.
Which is a massive undertaking at any phase of life, but to do it at such a young age is, dude, you are, I mean, just mentally you are set, because, you know, there's a phrase that says once the mind has learned new things, it's stretched and it can never go back to the way it was.
Right.
And yeah, you could never go back. I mean, I had a mental shift 4 years ago. I'm 52 now. I never thought I could break six figures. Yeah. And I've finally done it. It's an amazing, and it's not the money. Like I look at your car, and to me, it's a cool car, and yeah, would I love to drive it? Absolutely. But it's what that represents. It's not necessarily having that and flashiness of it. It's just what the work and the personal growth that you went through to get that. That to me is the most valuable part of the story.
Yeah, I don't think people realize. Those who just started following me this year don't understand. My good friends see the growth. You know, the people who were with me when I was living in my truck and stuff. Like,
well, yeah, when I saw you when you were trying to get your real estate license.
Yeah, I mean, even that.
And I was a rookie and I was feeling bad for you.
Yeah, I mean, that was the beginning stages of a really dark time. And I honestly didn't even go as in depth and in detail of what I was going through at the time. I don't honestly even like to think about it, if I'm being honest.
But it's good to remember that, because it fuels you to never go there again.
Oh yeah.
If it's up to you.
Right.
From Corolla to Lamborghini.
Yeah, I was going to make a post yesterday, but I didn't, about 2 years ago this month, bought that Corolla.
You should. That would be brilliant, because I come up with the titles of my episodes during the discussion, during the interview. And that's kind of what, that's something that, as one of the titles that had crossed my path or crossed my mind, was Corolla to Lamborghini. So yeah, you should do a post like that.
I should, with both my cars next week.
Yeah. Like, which one would you like, you know, or what is it worth to you, you know, to be, you know, something like that. But is there anything, you know, as we kind of wrap this up, is there anything that you want to share with anyone who's listening that maybe I haven't asked you about, just this journey you've been on and personal growth, because it's easy to get comfortable.
Yeah.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being comfortable. And if that's, you're happy with it, that is totally fine. I'm not knocking that, but there's so much in all of us, so much more in all of us than we realize. I think
if you're comfortable at all, that's great. But if you're wanting more, just start speaking it into existence. Start telling yourself you're going to do it. You know, you need to have that moment where I was just kind of like, when I was looking in the mirror and getting real emotional and yelling at myself, like, demand more than what you already have. You know, we're made to be insane and we're made to be great. You know, I honestly believe, like, my beliefs have changed a lot, but I honestly believe we're made to be
so much more
than we realize. And you know, if we're actually made in God's image, you know, then we have the potential.
We should be doing a lot more,
you know. Yeah, exactly. We have the potential to be somewhat on that level, you know. So go out and demand more and be more than what you are now. And that's for everybody, really. Go be better today than you were yesterday. Decide to work on something new and work on yourself. But that's all I'd really have, is don't settle with where you're at in life. You should always have something you can work on and progress. So,
well, and you mentioned speak it into existence. And there's a phrase that I heard years ago that says what goes out of your mouth, what comes out of your mouth goes into your life.
Yeah.
And that
but faith without works is dead, which is another good one.
Yeah. Of course,
you can have the faith and you can speak it into existence, but if you don't ever get off your ass, then
you have to work it into existence.
You know, you have to work. I love the quote where it's like, yeah, God can move mountains. He's going to hand you a shovel or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Get to work. He's giving you the tools to work.
Yeah. But
that's kind of what I think about it. Also, you asked me what's next. I didn't include this into the story, damn it. But when I'm in the summer, like completely forget to eat. Like I just don't have time to eat. I would usually eat during the days, like a Cliff Bar in the morning and a Red Bull. And I wouldn't eat until like 10 o'clock that night again.
Wow.
So this off season, I'm really trying to learn how to have a better balance or whatnot. But I've decided to work on my health and my body, and I want to become swole.
Yeah, because you're right. I mean, without if your temple is crumbling, then you can't do anything without being physical. And that's something I try to tell people, hey, start now and continue to do it. You know, at your age you're at, because like I say, I'm 52 and I'm really active for the most part. And it's so easy to, I see like a lot of other people my age and older people who have not been active, and they're just a prisoner inside this broken old shell. So yeah, keep doing that for sure.
Yeah, that's the next goal, is to get my body right, because I've cleared off for other goals too much.
Get swole. Get a Corolla, get a Lambo, get swole.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you so much. It's been fun watching your journey, you know, from afar, and just knowing where I saw you 2.5-3 years ago. It's phenomenal to see what you've become. And so I'm so glad you were able to take the time and come on and share this with us.
Thank you again for listening to the Parish the Thought Show. We would love your comments and feedback on our website at briankeithparish.com/feedback. If you love or hate what you hear, please give us a rating on whatever platform you find us. You're still here? Click on the next episode for more from the Parish the Thought Show.